Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 20, 2017. The Terrain Hotel rape and murder trial resumes in Juba.
On Monday, 3rd July, there is going to be a site visit to Terrain site where the prosecution and the defense with the court will have to visit the site so that they see things and all the damages for themselves.
And on this International Refugee Day, some former South Sudanese refugees say life was better in Uganda than it is back home.
We came back home and I've been deployed in one of the organizations. So that is the first skill I learned from there. And right now I'm able to save life. But now I feel bad if again I have to go back again to the refugees camp again in Uganda.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Government soldiers accused of raping five foreign aid workers and killing a South Sudanese journalist at the Terrain Hotel last July appeared in a military court in Juba. The case resumed today after a two-week delay. Presiding Judge Knight Brony adjourned the trial to give the new military prosecutor more time to study the case and transport key witnesses to Juba. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
A court official calls the courtroom to order at the start of today's trial. Lieutenant Colonel Mayer Jack, the new chief military prosecutor, presented documentary evidence, including medical reports of the victims. Jack also presented the death certificate of John Gatluak, the journalist who was murdered on July 11, 2016. Witnesses said men in uniform attacked the Terrain Hotel for several hours. The case is seen as a test of the Kiir administration's ability to try war crimes. Judge Brony allowed defense lawyer Lieutenant Peter Malual Deng's request for the prosecution to produce an autopsy report of the murdered journalist. Acting SPLA spokesman Colonel Santo Domic says jurors will be taken to the site of the attack next month.
On Monday, 3rd July, there is going to be a site visit to Terrain site where the prosecution and the defense with the court will have to visit the site so that they see things and all the damages for themselves.
Domic says court proceedings were adjourned to allow the prosecutor time to gather witnesses from both inside and outside the country.
Most of the witnesses and the victims are still outside the country. In the totality of 60 witnesses, only 6 are foreigners, are still outside the country. But the rest could be found inside South Sudan and maybe from the neighboring countries in East Africa.
All of the soldiers on trial pleaded not guilty. Domic says the courts will decide their guilt or innocence.
There has been a lot of debate over the ranges of the accusations that have been leveled against the suspects, from killing to rape and to stealing of properties. But of course, this is left for the court to judge later on when it comes to cross-questioning in the presence of the eyewitnesses that are going to give their testimony and the victims themselves.
Witnesses called UN peacekeepers stationed 1 mile away in a desperate plea for help, but no one came, according to witnesses. The military chief of the peacekeeping mission in South Sudan was fired, and the political chief resigned. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
A U.S. congressman from New Jersey says it will take years, if not a lifetime, for one of aid worker from his constituency to heal after surviving the violence at the Terrain Hotel in Juba last year. As INBO reports, the American aid worker who was attacked and forced to witness rapes committed by men in uniform is getting help on her road to recovery.
Republican Congressman Chris Smith received a call from the woman last August, just a few days before he was scheduled to fly to South Sudan. The New Jersey woman was one of the foreigners attacked in the Terrain complex. After being evacuated from Juba, she told Smith her foreign NGO denied her access to trauma counseling and was hoping Smith could use his influence to change that.
Any woman who is traumatized like this has often years and maybe forever, to deal with the aftermath.
The aid worker could access her health insurance but was denied psychological counseling. Smith says the aid worker told him that she was still traumatized by what has been called one of the worst targeted attacks on aid workers in South Sudan's civil war. One aid worker told the Associated Press that she had been raped by 15 South Sudanese soldiers. Smith says his constituent is still trying to grasp what happened on that day nearly a year ago.
She was not raped, but she was almost raped. Thankfully, when they actually fired a shot off to let her know that they weren't kidding, that she was risking death if she did not allow them to abuse her. But she has suffered and has been traumatized.
The U.S. Embassy in Juba and USAID assisted Smith's office in helping the woman with her insurance issues. Counseling was finally approved. Smith says he has demanded a zero-tolerance policy from Defense Minister Kwame Nyong and James Ajongo, the newly appointed Army chief. Smith says the terrain compound attack is a key example of a much larger problem in South Sudan.
With Salva Kiir said, your troops have to be seen as the protectors, not the perpetrators of violence, and there's nothing more heinous than rape.
While international pressure mounts on South Sudanese officials to ensure that soldiers responsible for the terrain complex are brought to justice, Smith says it is equally important to seek justice for the countless South Sudanese women who live in fear of being sexually assaulted every day.
And it's a concept of equality that I have pushed throughout this entire process. The reason why this could be a landmark legal proceeding is that it sets a template for all the other abuses and hopefully will have a chilling effect and will lead to a true zero-tolerance policy towards sexual assault.
Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Germany's chancellor is calling for the world's richest nations to take a new approach to foreign investment and aid in Africa. The so-called Merkel Plan is calling for more investment in Africa as a way of stemming Africa immigration to Europe. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell reports, looks at what is driving this strategy.
Germany's new focus on boosting African economies is no act of charity, the nation's foreign minister has said. It is an essential move to stem the flow of economic migrants from Africa to Europe. This week, Foreign Minister Gerhard Müller said he feared 100 million African refugees might come to Germany if nothing is done. Chancellor Angela Merkel has vowed to invest $335 million to attract foreign investors to Africa, and will try to convince the other 19 nations attending the G20 summit in July to show greater commitment to the continent's struggling economies. Germany has identified four countries as its focus: Ivory Coast, Morocco, Rwanda, and Tunisia, but has also had discussions with other African leaders. The head of the Economic Diplomacy Program at the South African Institute of International Affairs, Talitha Bertelsmann-Scott, says Germany has worked hard to overcome its violent African colonial past and emerge as a business leader.
Germany has given so much, has been very inspiring in terms of how it emerged after the Second World War as this leading manufacturing powerhouse. And Africa is really looking towards ways in which they can industrialize, and Germany does give leadership here.
But she said she has some reservations about the plan outlined by Germany's finance ministry, which she says did not involve any consultation with African nations. Analyst Mark Zander leads business consultancy Africon, a Germany-based company that focuses on helping businesses set up in sub-Saharan Africa. He says German companies are looking to make serious long-term investments, and more are looking each day. He spoke to VOA from Stuttgart, Germany.
A lot of German companies are still family-owned, so their approach to the African region might, on the one side, be very cautious, but on the other side, a lot of German companies do properly work on the strategies and also think long-term.
CEO of the Berlin-based German-African Business Association, Christoph Kannengießer, says about 600 German companies are already working on the continent, and he expects that number to grow. The continent's booming population and growing consumer base make it an attractive business destination, he says.
The new German approach to Africa is, first of all, to accept and to take into consideration much more that Africa is a political and economic factor, and that Germany should strengthen the ties to Africa and build up more and more intensive relations to Africa in general and to important African countries. And I think the second aspect is that we recognize Africa as a continent of economic opportunities and that we should engage as well.
The two-day G20 summit will be held July 7th and 8th in Hamburg. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, life in the day of a refugee. Find out what it is like when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how much is music a part of your life?
Not really. I like music in my free time. So when I'm so busy, I'm not so addicted, yet I love it. Like in the evening when I'm done with my work.
Music does a lot to me. I would say most of my life duty or day duties, music is one of them. Before I go to sleep, the first thing I think of is the music.
It's the language of everyone. When everyone listens to music, it's the language of dancing.
Oh my God, it's really wonderful. I like music so much because if you're so talented in music, you'll have very many ways of feeling in your life. For example, music can take stress away from your heart.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today we're talking about HIV and young African women. South Africa has the most people living with HIV, almost 7 million. It also manages the globe's largest antiretroviral program, keeping about 4 million people alive with the drugs. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg. Specialists voiced their concern about the spiking rate of infection among young women, a trend reflected throughout the continent.
Among the people socializing in a tavern in Alexandra Township in Johannesburg is Karabo Sateke, who asked that VOA not give her real name. She's a slight, attractive 19-year-old in a veil of an orange dress, defying the winter chill. Sateke often meets one of her partners here. He's more than double her age. Sateke explains that sex with older men is sometimes rough and always without a condom. The director of the Section 27 social justice movement, Mark Hayward, says South Africa is treating HIV successfully, but is failing to prevent new infections, reflecting a global trend.
What does it tell you about the lack of knowledge about HIV 20, 30 years into the HIV epidemic? You know, we've seen, shockingly, a decline in knowledge of HIV amongst young people. It's like we've taken our foot off the accelerator in certain respects.
He says more than 200 young women, ages 15 to 24, are infected with HIV each day in South Africa. In 2015, that demographic accounted for the largest segment of new HIV infections in South Africa and a disproportionate number of new cases in the region. Adolescent and young women made up a quarter of the new cases in sub-Saharan Africa, according to UNAIDS' most recent global report. UNAIDS says adolescent and young women in Africa are at particularly high risk for a variety of reasons, like poverty, lack of education, and violence. Like Sateke, many poor young women in South Africa have transactional sexual relationships with older men who have jobs and money. The men buy them food, clothes, and gifts. Healthcare workers in South Africa say transactional sex is a key driver of the new infections among young women in the country. Haywood is at the forefront of protests to demand the government make a new weapon against HIV infection available to young women. It's a combination of antiretroviral drugs called pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP. Taken correctly, the pill can prevent people from getting HIV. Haywood says the state could afford to give this to young women for free.
If you have literally tens of billions of rand being stolen every year out of different government departments, that's money that could be generating programs that reduce the vulnerability of young women. But there has to be a will.
South Africa's Health Minister, Aaron Motsoaledi, says he plans to provide PrEP to young women in about 2 to 3 years after educating them about the pill. It must be taken at about the same time every day and must ideally be used with condoms. But after publicly opposing President Jacob Zuma because of Zuma's alleged corruption, Motsoaledi is politically isolated, and Haywood says his innovative policies to prevent new HIV infections are likely to stall. Darren Taylor, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Today is the World Refugee Day. South Sudanese who were refugees and have returned home in Imatong State say life in refugee camps was better than their current conditions. The returnees say they learned skills while in camps, which are helping them to earn a living. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Torit.
On this World Refugee Day, thousands of South Sudanese continue to flee to neighboring Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia and Sudan. Some South Sudanese have lived as refugees for decades now. Former refugees in Imatong State say they never imagined South Sudanese would still be seeking refuge in other countries after the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed in 2005, ending the war between the Sudan People's Liberation Movement and the Khartoum government. Betty Achiro lived in a refugee camp in Uganda for 15 years and says during that time, she trained as a midwife. Achiro, who returned to South Sudan in 2005, says she never regretted being a refugee.
I've come back to my country to serve my people in the way of health, and I want to prove the health of my country. Here, mostly, getting work is easy when you come to your own country because you need to get this nationality ID. If you have it, it's very easy for you to get work. But when you're in Uganda, it's very hard to get work for you because they're saying you're South Sudanese, this is a Ugandan, so it is very hard. But when in your own country, it is very easy for you to get work.
And Achiro says she learned other valuable lessons while living in Uganda.
When someone has done something bad for you, you don't have to revenge. When someone says sorry, accept the sorry and continue with life. But in our country, if someone has done something bad for you, you say, aha, this one I have to pay it. When this one has killed your person, you also kill the own person.
Assunta Anini sheltered at the Agago refugee settlement camp in northern Uganda for 17 years. Anini says her parents married her off at the age of 15, denying her an education in South Sudan. When she sought refuge in Uganda, Anini enrolled in a school for adult refugees. Speaking in Arabic, Anini says life was good back then.
Agago, I will be there.
At first, I was in Agago. And when the Lord Resist and Arm LRA forced us out, we went to Changwali. But life was good. We ate well and children went to school. But when we came here, there is no good life. People are hungry and the schools are not good.
Another former South Sudanese refugee, Francis Ataba, says life in a refugee camp taught him handiwork and how to grow crops.
In the work of agriculture, actually in Uganda, people are not idle. They are all committed. I've been there also, enjoy. Those are things I've experienced in UG. The bad part of it is like the freedom is not like the way you behave in your country. Because that even when we are young, we always go for this one. How do you collect firewood from the bush. Here in South Sudan, they don't stop like such kind of saying that you should not cut other things. People are free.
Many former refugees who lived in Khartoum say they regret returning to South Sudan after independence. Seima Valentina came back after 2011. Speaking in Arabic, Valentina says her life was much better in the Sudanese capital.
In Khartoum, I was happy. The health of my children was good. I live in a good house. I could brew alcohol to feed my children. It was only the police taking some of us into cell for bringing alcohol, although I was not taken.
Former refugee Elizabeth Bosco urges South Sudan's leaders to do everything possible to make South Sudan a good place for its citizens to live.
I live in a camp for so many years, and I finished all my school from Uganda, where we were in the camp. From there, I finished my nursing school immediately. We came back home, and I've been deployed in one of the organizations. So that is the first skill I learned from there. And right now, I'm able to save life. But now I feel bad if again I have to go back again to the refugees camp again in Uganda when there are so many children suffering.
Despite talks of a national dialogue to bring peace to South Sudan, international aid agencies say up to 2,000 new South Sudanese refugees continue to arrive in Uganda every week. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
As part of World Refugee Day, which commemorates the obstacles refugees face each year, while also celebrating the courage of refugees, we decided to spend a few days with young South Sudanese refugees in a settlement in northern Uganda. Here is first in a series on how young South Sudanese cope with being refugees.
I am Mugume Davis Rakarinj, and it is 10:30 here at Agrupe Village, Rhino Camp here in Uganda. I am here with some gentlemen. I would like them to introduce themselves.
I'm Lul Kok Machar, a resident of Agrupe.
I am Gaikong Kawoska. I'm in Agrupe Village.
I am Robert Obwana in Agrupe Village.
Buta Taro Romans in Agrupe Village.
These young men ran from South Sudan because of the wave of violence there. Some came from Yei, others came from Pajok recently. They are going to show me what their typical day in a camp looks like. Starting with you, Rul Kok, basically, how is your day like? How do you guys start off your day?
At 12, I come for conversation with these guys of mine who are with me here. We play cards and those games like dominoes.
Rul Kok has explained just basically in brief how his day is like. My friend Buta Ataro, you've been here for long. What is interesting? What do you enjoy when you're here?
I stay just home because I have no support to go and study in next level, which is secondary. The secondary which we have here is only Wanyangi.
Well, how much time would you take to walk from here to Wanyangi Secondary School?
You will take 3 days if you walk by footing.
3 days?
Yes, of course, because it is very far.
Lul Kok is saying it's about 3 hours, isn't it?
From here to Wanyange, it is 3 hours.
Kok, why are you not in school? You speak good English.
Since I came to Uganda, I have no support.
When did you come to Uganda?
It was 2013. I came here alone, so I had no support to go to school. Actually, I was supposed to be in school.
Do you now, for example, intend to go back to South Sudan?
When my country will be freed out of war, I can go back. But since it is still in war, it is very hard for me to go back.
Lul Kok, way back in South Sudan in Yei, how would you, for example, typically spend your day when you have not gone to school?
I used to go and have conversation with my friends.
Which is the same thing you're doing here, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so we are also joined by another young man, John Jal, who came from Upper Nile. When did you come here, John Jal?
Actually, I came here in 2013, at the onset of the first war that broke out in December.
When you're here, basically, what do you guys discuss about?
We just come here and play games, dominoes, the playing cards, and football in the evening.
These young men are going to show me how they play this game. What is the name of this game, Kok?
It is the dominoes.
So how do you guys play it? Because I don't understand any part of it.
As you can see, it is according to the colors now. And also you count the holes. Dominas are all done. Yeah.
And how many people have to play it?
Only 4 people have to play this domino.
But I'm seeing like a group of people now, some are just watching spectators or what?
Those are the fan others, they wanted to participate even because the people who are playing, they will be leaving to others even so that it will rotate to all of the people.
Cut. I have one. Young
Mbawale. So now has won the game?
The one who win the game. I'm by name called Buta Taro.
Okay. Okay, Buta, you're a smart guy. Yeah?
You are seen now as this young man already closed the game. So the person at the left side is the loser. So he has to get out and leave the gap for another person. So they are now the guys have to struggle to make sure the one at the right, at my right hand, doesn't win or doesn't close the game. Because when he closes, I will be the one to leave the game.
So basically, that's how the game is played, and everyone has to keep struggling to make sure that wins the game. You guys are around 20 guys, I can say. Is everyone now going to be eliminated until everyone plays, or someone can be champion and play, for example, for the whole day?
When you keep winning or maybe close the games every each and game, it is very impossible for you to go out unless if you are tired.
Okay. And what is the prize for the winning person? What is the prize?
You don't want to deliver.
The prize for the winning person is to just spend the whole game. There is no prize here because we are doing it to entertain ourselves. So as long as I'm winning, I will always be here. I forget about going home. Even sometimes line time comes, it's getting me when I'm still busy playing. You know, it keeps me busy.
Yeah, we can go and have lunch at this time. No, I think so.
What can I expect there for lunch? What are you guys going to serve me?
We are going to serve you for sure and beans as we usually do because this is the only type of food we are having here in camp.
So the gentlemen have offered to take me home for lunch and I appreciate. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
You are welcome.
You have this one.
That radio diary was prepared by Mungume Debs Rwakarinj, who was speaking to South Sudanese refugees in a refugee settlement in northern Uganda. That brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Celebration by Ruth Matiang.
Shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, ameshazaliwa. Shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, ameshazaliwa. Wala la la, wala la la la, wala la la, wala la la, wala la la, wala la la la. Fa la la la, I woke up one morning and realized that I was new.
Shangilie, Shangilie.
A savior was born in my sins, he washed away.
Shangilie,
a wonderful counselor, mighty God.
Shangilie, Shangilie.
A savior is here, let's celebrate him today. Ay, 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 ay. Shangilie, Nibwana. Shangilie, Nibwana. Shangilie ni Bwana, shangilie ni Bwana, shangilie ni Bwana, ameshazaliwa. Wala la la, 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 wala la la. I woke up one morning and realized that I was new.
Shangilie, shangilie.
A savior was born in my sins, he washed away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wonderful counselor, mighty God.
Shangilie,
a savior is here, let's celebrate him today. Aya, 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 Shangilie, Nibwana.
Shangilie, Nibwana. Shangilie, Nibwana. Amesha Zaliwa. Shangilie.
We've been listening to Ruth Matiang with the song Celebration. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Be the first to know the latest news by joining us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.